It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 296. Man, we are just four podcasts away from the tricentennial, number 300. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about your Philadelphia Phillies in crisis. They were swept at the hands of the Washington Nationals this week, coming off a very dispiriting series against the Atlanta Braves, and things are not looking good right now. And joining me to talk about it in just a few minutes is a former Phillies beat writer and now a columnist for Forbes and the Philly Voice, Kevin Cooney, is going to help me break down everything that went wrong with the Phillies over the last week or so. And we'll talk some Gabe Kapler, some of the decisions he's made, both on the field and off the field. Obviously, a very challenging week for the Phil skipper, who is a friend of the podcast, but having a difficult week with the team, really in a tailspin at the moment. So we're going to get into all of that, where the Phillies stand in the standings at the moment. A weird story involving the Tampa Bay Rays that we have to talk about in just a few minutes. Also, we'll preview the upcoming series against the Marlins, and I will have your stat of the week. But let's get into the Phillies here. And after losing 7-4 in the series finale on Thursday, the Phillies now stand at 39-35, just four games over 500. They are 4.5 games back in the National League East. The Nationals suddenly have crept to within three games of the Phillies, shaving four games in 4 days. They've won four in a row. The Phillies have lost four in a row. When you think about it, ever since they started off the season 4-0, that was their high point of the season. I mean, it wasn't, because they've gotten to 11 games over 500 at different points this year. But since starting off the season 4-0, they've been a 500 baseball team. But they've been dreadful as of late. They are 6-13 in their last 19 games here as they leave the nation's capital and head home for a series against the Marlins, which is something this team desperately needs. They could certainly use a home series against the Miami Marlins. But, you know, the way this team is playing right now, with their inability to score runs, I don't know that they're going to take two out of three from the Marlins. I don't know if they're going to win one game against the Marlins the way they're playing right now. Obviously, the big story coming into the game on Thursday was the brouhaha going on in Philadelphia with Gabe Kapler and his decision not to bench Gene Segura after Segura failed to run out what should have been a double in the game on the second game of the doubleheader on Wednesday against Max Scherzer. Hit a looping line drive to left field that he just jogged out of the box on, and when it fell for a hit and passed a diving Juan Soto, Segura realized too late that it should have been a double, that he wasn't running out of the box, and it was held to a long single. Now, there's no way to know whether or not by getting a double there, the Phillies score that inning. I mean, this Max Scherzer was absolutely on his game, and you've got to tip your cap to Max Scherzer and Patrick Corbin in those first two games. The Phillies offense obviously has been terrible, but Patrick Corbin was a Cy Young contender, and Max Scherzer is a first ballot Hall of Famer who broke his nose in bunting practice the day before his start. He made that start with a black eye and was absolutely dominant. It was unbelievable. What a performance from Max Scherzer. Sometimes you got to tip your cap. And we all knew that Max Scherzer was going to be awesome in the second game. I mean, well, we suspected a ticked off Max Scherzer was going to be even nastier than he normally is. But I was surprised when Gene Segura failed to run out that fly ball, and this is the second time it's happened in just a few weeks, and after Gabe Kapler said that he would be held accountable if it were to happen again, he wasn't held accountable, and Segura was back in the lineup after his second offense, and I don't think he should have played in the finale. Now Segura hit a home run in the series finale. It didn't ultimately end up meaning a whole lot, but it did tie the game at three briefly before the Nationals put it away. And look, I want to win as much as anybody. I wanted this team to win this series finale as much as anybody. But the point is now not about hustling. It's about, if you're a manager and you say you're going to do something, if you say something is unacceptable, it's like me with my kids. When I tell them that behaving a certain way is unacceptable, but I let them continue to behave that way without any consequences, they're not going to take me seriously. Ah, Dad doesn't mean what he has. Dad doesn't mean what he says. We never get in any trouble for throwing food at the dinner table. He doesn't do anything. If you're not willing to go forward with a punishment, then you can't threaten one. Then you can't threaten that a certain activity or a certain action is unacceptable. Now, I mean, I was on the WIP morning show with Angelo Cataldi on Thursday morning with Angelo and Rhea Hughes and the rest of the gang, Al Morganti, and I think Hollis Thomas was in there. And I always love going on the show with those guys. But I think Angelo went too far in calling for Gabe Kapler to be fired because he had Gene Segura in the lineup. I get why Angelo is upset. But I disagree with the degree to which he's upset. But I do worry that this is going to cause a problem as the season goes on. And listen, this is up to Matt Klentak to figure out if Gabe Kapler is handling the situation properly. Because from my outside perspective, and it's an outside perspective, this is not how I would have handled it. But I've never been in the major league locker room. I've never been a major league player. Maybe his players will respond, and maybe he hasn't lost any of that authority that he needs to have as a manager. We'll see. We will see, of course, but right now the team on the field is the big problem. Hustling is not the reason why this team is losing right now. There are lots of reasons why this team is losing, and not much of it is, and really none of it has to do with hustling. Here's my order, okay? Here are the reasons why I think the Phillies are struggling right now, and I think the biggest problem right now is the impotent offense. And we've been talking about it on this podcast week after week after week, this inconsistent Phillies offense that was supposed to be the strength of the team. You go out and you trade Sixto Sanchez and JT Realmuto, Sixto Sanchez and Jorge Alfaro to get JT Realmuto. And Realmuto has been fine, but we haven't seen the offensive power like we were expecting to see with him moving away from Miami. Bryce Harper was supposed to rake in Citizens Bank Park. Remember all we were talking about, the fact of how great he's always hit at Citizens Bank Park and he's just going to light it up there? Hasn't happened. Like I said last week, he's had an okay season. It's been a fine season, but he struggled on the road trip just like every other member of this offense not named Scott Kingery. I know Rhys Hoskins has had a quiet last couple of weeks. We haven't seen Rhys Hoskins go on a tear. None of these guys are hitting home runs. Gene Segura, his hustling is an issue. His offense is the problem. He's batting well under 200 over the last month. Well under 200. In the 190s. All right, maybe that's not well under 200. It's under 200, okay? The Phillies have struggled mightily since Andrew McCutchen went down. They have not been able to figure it out. And they tried a major lineup shakeup at the top for the game on Thursday with Harper leading off and Rhys Hoskins batting second. It didn't have much of an effect. They did get on base a little bit early in the game, but they left a lot of base runners on, as they have been doing recently. But I understand using Harper in the leadoff spot. He's a career 273, 362, 573 hitter in the leadoff spot. Very good there. And he hits 280, 357, 600 when taking the first plate appearance of the game. And you also get him some more at-bats. If he feels comfortable up there, do it. In Matt Gelb's story for The Athletic, he noted that Phil's leadoff hitters have batted 115 with a 220 on base and a 154 slugging percentage in 59 plate appearances since McCutchen's injury. I knew McCutchen was, we were going to miss him. I didn't realize the degree to which we were going to miss Andrew McCutchen. And I guess the question now is, does John Mailey, the hitting coach, start to get scapegoated? Maybe he deserves to be. I don't like calling for anyone to be fired. So you're not going to hear me call for anybody to be fired on this podcast. I mean, maybe it's, I don't have a take, okay? I don't have a take on whether or not somebody should be fired, because I don't want somebody calling for me to be fired, you know, especially someone who's not intimately aware of what I'm doing. The Phillies will make the call as to whether or not John Mailey should be let go from his duties. What we can look at is how the team is performing. And this team is not hitting the ball out of the ballpark. 24th in baseball in home runs in a season in which more home runs are being hit than ever before. The Phillies are not joining in on that parade. And look at this lineup. Look who they have. How are they not pounding the ball out of the ballpark with impunity? But they've given up the most home runs in the National League and the fourth most in baseball. So the offense, this team was built around the offense. This team was designed to score runs, and they're not doing it. They're not scoring runs. They're not hitting the ball out of the ballpark. When they score, it's single, 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 double, double, single, 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 single. You know what I mean? It's they have to really work hard to score runs. It feels like they're trying to bleed runs, and then they'll bleed, they'll scratch out two runs on five hits, and then the next inning they give up a three-run homer like that. That's what's dispiriting about this team. They just can't get anything going offensively, and no one seems to know why. That's what's distressing. And it doesn't look like they're going to pull out of it anytime soon. The second most important reason why the Phillies are struggling this year is Aaron Nola. He has the seventh worst ERA among qualified starters this year. His ERA is closer to 5 than it is to 4. He has been extremely unreliable. He had a terrible March and April, was great in May, and has an ERA around 9 in June. You can't have your ace of the rotation pitching like that. His command has not come back the way we thought it would. His fastball command and his changeup command. That stuff's getting hammered. And he doesn't have an answer for it. He's not hurt. The velocity is still there. He just doesn't have it. We've talked about it before. It's 2009 Cole Hamels all over again. But Aaron Nola's inability to be the ace of the staff has been more damaging than, say, the number 5 starter, which I think is the third biggest reason why this team has faltered. They you know, once out of every 5 times through the rotation, they're getting garbage. They're getting nothing. The Phillies still don't know, as of this recording, what they're going to do with their starting rotation on Saturday and Sunday. Piecing everything together at the last minute. They can't start Vince Velasquez again. They can't put Cole Irvin back out there again. And by the way, we've got to talk about Cole Irvin. Cole freaking Irvin coming in to pitch with the Phillies down 3-1 in the first game of the doubleheader on Wednesday, and then giving up 2 home runs in his... What the hell is Cole Irvin doing coming in that spot? You got to be kidding me with that decision. That just wasn't smart. Get a guy in who can strike some guys out. I don't care if it's right-handed or left-handed. And if you didn't want to use Jose Alvarez in that spot because maybe you were saving him for a situation where the game might be tied or you might have to protect a lead and you wanted to use him in the second game of the doubleheader, okay. But, you know, you're facing, you know, at that point, you know you have Scherzer coming up in the second game and you're only down 3-1. You gotta try and lock it down right there. You can't bring in Cole Irvin, which is essentially waving the white flag. If you say you have confidence in Cole Irvin, what are you getting that from? Where does that confidence come from? It can't come from his performance on the field. Same with Vince Velasquez. I don't know what they're going to do on Saturday and Sunday. And it doesn't seem like a move is close to coming. It doesn't sound like the Phillies are close to adding a starting pitcher, even somebody for the back end of the rotation. Maybe they finally bring up Eniel De Los Santos, who should have started last weekend in Atlanta, instead of having a hodgepodge of relievers on Sunday. Obviously, injuries are a reason why this team has struggled. The bullpen has lost a lot of guys. And when you think about the high-priced veterans they've signed the last couple of seasons, Pat Neshek, David Robertson, and Tommy Hunter, Hunter and Robertson haven't been on the field at all this year. Robertson just for a couple of games. Hunter not at all. Hunter sounds like he's close to coming back. But I've never been a big Tommy Hunter fan. He'll be okay. He'll be, you know, hopefully he'll be an upgrade over some of what they have in there right now. But Edobre Ramos came back, and he gave up a killer 3-run home run to Robles in the series finale. There's no reason to feel secure with Edobre Ramos on the mound. You know, there are two guys I'd like to see back. Adam Morgan was lights out, and I want to see David Robertson back. He was supposed to be the stabilizer in the back of the bullpen. But he hasn't been here. All that money to those three guys. Pat Neshek comes off the injured list. He pitched, what, 2 batters before having to go back on the injured list? I mean, come on. The bullpen has had their share of injuries, but the guys that they've lost, Victor Arano wasn't lights out. You miss these guys, but, you know, is Victor Arano any better than Edgar Garcia? Is he any better than Juan Nicasio? I mean, I don't know. It's a lot. You don't have anybody at the back of the bullpen where you think, man, we just got to get it to those two guys and we're in great shape. Maybe Hector Neris, but they're just not getting him leads right now. He hasn't seen the mound in quite a little while. And the lack of depth. Matt Klentak forgot to do one big thing this offseason, and that was add a starting pitcher. He relied too much on the Pivetta-Velasquez breaking out scenario playing out. And maybe Pivetta's breaking out now We've seen Zach Eflin have an all-star season, but Velasquez was clearly not the answer in the starting rotation, and I still don't understand why the Phillies weren't. Maybe they were in on Charlie Morton, but I don't understand how Charlie Morton goes someplace for 2 years. Like the Rays, who were not seemed to be as big a as much of a contender as the Phillies. Maybe Morton just didn't want to come back to Philadelphia. I don't know. If that's the case, then I can't fault the Phillies for not signing a guy like Charlie Morton. But we were all offseason, we knew that this team needed starting pitching. And they thought, well, maybe we'll just get it at the trade deadline. Well, if they wait too much longer on starting pitching, they might be out of it. And getting starting pitching at that point might not be possible. Still think they should have signed Patrick Corbin to a 6-year deal. I do. And bench depth was also the result of Phillies youngsters failing. The Phillies decided to roll the dice with Nick Williams and Aaron Altair as your backup outfielders and Roman Quinn or some combination of all those guys, and those guys have all failed. They've all failed. And so, I mean, there are a lot of things wrong with this baseball team. Now, as we sit here and we talk, things could turn around quickly. They could bounce right back. And they could go on a nice winning streak here at home against some substandard teams. But I'm not banking on that. I see nothing with this team right now that makes me think this is a potential playoff team. And these are the types of situations where you need your star players to come through, where you need Bryce Harper to carry your team and hit 5 home runs in a week, where you need Rhys Hoskins to go on a tear and hit 5 home runs in a week. Scott Kingery, bless his heart, has been fantastic. And they need him to continue doing that. They need Gene Segura to get some damn hits and to run him out. Cesar Hernandez, Michael Franco, these guys are just there. They're not doing anything. Jay Bruce had been struggling over the last couple weeks, but he had a nice game in the series finale against the Nationals. So good to see Jay Bruce go yard again and get another knock. But, you know, it just feels like when Andrew McCutchen went down, the life drained out of this baseball team. And I don't know if one guy has that effect. I know Andrew McCutchen was a very popular player and he was extremely productive, but is this all because Andrew McCutchen has gone away? I mean, we know the issues with the rotation and the bullpen, but the offense is just mystifying. And so we're going to talk to Kevin Cooney about that coming up here just after the break from Philly Voice and Forbes. We'll talk to Kevin about the Phils and what we've seen over these last couple of weeks. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And joining us to talk about this nightmare of a road trip and really a month of June that has really gone into a tailspin is Kevin Cooney, great friend of the podcast. You know him well, of course, from Twitter, at Kevin Cooney. He writes for the Philly Voice and for Forbes, a fantastic former Phillies beat writer, and is still plugged in on the team as well as anybody in the city. Kevin, thanks so much for coming back on Hittin' Season. How are you, buddy?
No problem, John. How are you?
Well, you know, man, we've had better weeks here on the podcast because I can't imagine, you know, it's not a lot of fun. I give full credit to anyone who downloads this podcast and then goes ahead and actually listens to us talk about this baseball team right now because it's brutal. I mean, obviously getting swept by the Nationals is awful, and the way they played in Atlanta over the weekend was terrible, and all the rainouts in D.C. I mean, what an awful week of Phillies baseball. And, you know, I don't like to start off by talking about the manager because I like Gabe Kapler. We've had a lot of friendly interactions and stuff like that. But obviously, you know, a lot's been made about the Segura thing not running out his base hit against the Nationals the other night, and he had him in the starting lineup against the Nationals here in the series finale, and he hit a home run, which, you know, of course, it's, you know, the argument that Kapler used was him being in the lineup gives us the best chance to win. But again, you know, like I said on the WIP morning show on Thursday morning, and I know you've been saying this on Twitter and been talking about this kind of stuff. I think you mentioned it to those guys on the morning show this week as well. Just it's really hard to see what Gabe Kapler's modus operandi is going to be for situations like we've seen with Gene Segura. How is he going to enforce rules if he's not living up to his own words by saying something's unacceptable? What's your take on all of this with Kapler and Segura? Is it as big a deal as we're making it out to be?
You know, John, it's funny because it's a two-pronged thing. The first part is, you know, if you want to look at the Segura thing a couple weeks ago, and, you know, and obviously there was the Cataldi-Kapler blow-up after that and all that. And, you know, could that have been argued that it's a routine pop-up? Not everybody runs out routine pop-ups in San, you know, like the one in San Diego. So, you know, that is a different animal than what happened on Wednesday night. Wednesday night's inexcusable. And I always thought that the bigger issue on the Segura thing there was your manager just defended you to the hill, very publicly, on the whole thing in San Diego with the McCutcheon injury and kind of everything else that took place from that. And then that's the way you repay him. You know, that to me, you know, I put the blame on Segura for that. But also, you know, if you're going to create rules, you got to occasionally have some bite. And the one thing I would say about Kapler is, in a lot of ways, you know, one of his strengths is he still thinks like a player, and one of the weaknesses, he still thinks like a player.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, you know, he's not, I don't know if he doesn't feel totally comfortable yet in cracking these guys, if he's more willing to give them the benefit of the doubt because he's not that far removed from the field himself. In my mind, that's the concerning part. It's at a certain point, a manager has to roar in order to make his voice heard. Now, I'll preface this, and it's funny. I talked to a colleague of mine tonight, and he goes, let's also be clear. In the modern baseball landscape, sometimes managers don't have the power to issue a suspension or a benching. That's, you see more general managers or upper management types getting involved. So we shouldn't just lay everything at the feet of Gabe Kapler on this. But at some point, he's going to have to strike out at somebody who breaks his rules. He's going to have to make an example of him. This would have been a perfect case in a case where the team is struggling. And I get, and this is very long-winded in saying, I get what he's doing, that the team is in a slump and he needs to win games right now.
Yeah.
But I also believe that for the longer-term good of the franchise, it would have been better and maybe more convenient to say, hey, Gene, sit out tonight. You know, and you could say, clear your mind or whatever. You know, you don't even have to label it a suspension, but you just don't put him in the lineup. I think that would have been the better move long-term.
Well, I mean, as we sit here now, the Phillies are just about ready to lose this final game against the Nationals here in this series and fall 4.5 games back behind the Atlanta Braves in the National League East. I mean, this team was up by 3 games just a couple weeks ago. There's been a 7-game swing in the standings since then. And there's not a single aspect of this team that's working right now. The hitting's not working. Starting pitching hasn't been reliable. The bullpen, blew open a close game here in the finale. The base running hasn't been good. Bryce Harper's been thrown out, I think, 3 times in the last week and a half on some plays where he shouldn't have. Tonight's wasn't his fault, but the other two were. I mean, it's just that there's not a single aspect of this team that's working right now. What is your explanation for this? Is this injuries? Is this simply a lack of talent and depth? Is it coaching or is it a combination?
A little bit of everything. Yeah, you know, it's hard to believe, John. I'm as I sit here and think, it was less than a month ago that they left Milwaukee after a really good series and actually a pretty good road trip. You know, played the Cubs well, played the Brewers well on the road, and came home and beat St. Louis 2 out of 3. And you're thinking, oh, here they go. And then obviously they went on the West Coast, and then McCutcheon gets hurt, and you know they get swept by the Dodgers. And really, since that moment, remember a couple of years ago, Neris gave up the home. You know, Neris gave up home runs in Dodger Stadium, and they never looked like they recovered.
Yeah,
it's almost like they haven't recovered from the way they got spanked against the Dodgers. And that sounds far fetched to say, but in every series since then, they've struggled to put any offense together. Their bullpen obviously has struggled with all the injuries. And then even, you know, their starting rotation is just a mess at this point. In a sense where, you know, their fifth starter situation is just bad. I mean, you know, you haven't gotten performances from Nola that you thought, and Arrieta's been inconsistent. But that you're giving away 20% of your games right off the bat is not good. And so, when you add all that together, the curious moves by the manager, you know, what he did with Cole Irvin on Monday or on Wednesday in game 1 you know, obviously Segura thing, all of it added together. And when you look at a bigger picture, John, the fact that this team, and obviously the numbers are going to get updated after Thursday night's game, but this team started the day on Thursday in the bottom third in most offensive categories in the National League. This was a lineup that everybody had dreams of being the old 07, 08, 09, 10 runs in a cloud of dust kind of lineup. It's not that. And so there's blame to go around in every aspect. The good news is the Marlins and the Mets may throw them a little bit of a life preserver here. But if you go 4-6 or 3-7 or 5-5 against those two teams, boy, there's going to be trouble to pay.
Well, especially since the Braves don't look like they're going to slow down anytime soon. They're not playing on Thursday, but they are red hot right now. And obviously, having just played them in Atlanta, it seems like there's a larger gulf than I would have imagined. And of course, you know, we say all this, things can turn around quickly. We saw, you know, the Phillies were three games up, and now they're 4.5 back. They, you know, both.
Look at where the Nationals were a month ago.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
And you can make an argument. I know Phillies fans aren't going to want to hear this. The Nationals are a more dangerous threat to the Braves and the Phillies right now. I mean, they're getting healthy. They got the three top starters at the top of the rotation. If Corbin can piece it back together, and he looked good on Wednesday. I know he struggled in the starts before that. And the run differential has gone from ridiculously lopsided to right around, yeah, they're starting to get into positive numbers here. I mean,
well, the bullpen wasn't going to be this bad all season. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
it was bad. It was historically bad. They couldn't be that. They couldn't keep up that pace.
No. So you add all this together, and suddenly, like, the Nationals are a threat again, and the Phillies are kind of hanging on for dear life. I mean, right now they would be out of the wild card.
I guess, you know. How do they fix this? Is there a coaching move that they can make? I mean, obviously, the Mets just scapegoated Dave Island, their pitching coach, today to kind of...
Which was weird.
Yeah.
They hired Phil Reed.
Yeah, it's not... That move didn't make a whole lot of sense, but I know there's a lot of people wondering about John Mailey and what exactly, you know... It makes sense. I understand why fans are questioning John Mailey is because the hitting was supposed to be the strength of this team. You've got a lot of star players in this lineup, and... None of them have been able to hit consistently, really, this year, except for Scott Kingery, really, for the most part. It's been a collection of disappointments, and so obviously you intellectually look, well, you know, they're not hitting, and they should be hitting. Well, the hitting coach, you know, must be the problem, and I don't know that that's the case, because I mean, I just don't know what John Mailey can do to tell Bryce Harper or Gene Segura or, you know, some of these other veteran hitters like JT Realmuto who are not hitting for power. That's the big problem. It's like, these guys are not hitting for power. It's astonishing to me in a year in which there's going to be a record number of home runs hit that this team can't hit the ball out of the ballpark. Do you have any reason, any explanation why that could be? It just seems bizarre to me.
Yeah, besides Bruce and Kingery lately, that's all their power at this point. I mean, you know, I think... I'm thinking Hoskins had a home run late last week in one of those games. It was a blowout in Atlanta, or might have been in Atlanta. But they're not generating power, and I think part of it, you know, what's going to happen is nothing's going to happen immediately, okay? I just can't – and let me preface all this by saying I don't see a managerial move. If there's going to be one, it'll be in the off season.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And that's only if they don't make the playoffs. Okay. So that's just not in the cards. Okay. No matter what anybody says about Kaplan. Now, if you want to look at and they're not going to move Chris Young as pitching coach because of the fact that, you know, he just got there. Was it ill-advised to maybe replace Rick Kranitz as quickly as they did? Because, you know, Aaron Nola hasn't looked the same without Rick Kranitz.
No.
I mean, that's a legitimate conversation to be had, but they're not going to make that move right away. Mailey is interesting because you look at Hoskins. You know, you look at some of their guys. You look at Hernandez. You look at, you know, Kingery changed a lot of his stuff to go back to what he used to be.
Right, away from what the Phillies teach. Right, exactly.
Away from kind of what he was last year. So there's another, you know, long dart, if you will, thrown towards the target. you know, you start adding Franco in there. You want to look at Nick Williams even last year and how he never really progressed to the point that they felt totally comfortable. Herrera, you know, all these guys, you add all this up and you do start making a case for, all right, who significantly got him better under him? And that's where hitting coaches get in a really dangerous spot. And do I think it's going to happen immediately? No. I would say the All-Star break, if they're going to make a move, it'll be at the All-Star break. I'm trying to remember. I think Milt Thompson, when they did the Milt Thompson thing, it may have been the first series after the All-Star break in St. Louis in 2010. That's the last in-season coaching change, I believe, they made of that sort.
Wow.
I don't think it's a given they make any, but I think that if it's going to happen, it won't happen until the All-Star break, because I think they see this portion of the schedule coming up as a chance to kind of, okay, catch your breath, rebound. And again, if you don't rebound against the Marlins and the Mets, that's where I think you're going to probably see some real alarm bells going off at One Citizens Way.
Well, as we're watching this team flounder, obviously people are calling for Matt Klentak to add pieces to at least get a number five starter in here. And there are some guys you'd think would be available, although it's still unclear who some of the selling teams are going to be and who some of the teams that might stand pat are. You know, the Diamondbacks don't look like they're ready to sell just yet. The Cincinnati Reds they have a really good starting rotation, and, you know, they may not be out of it for a wild card at this point either. And so there's a lot of teams that might just not be ready to sell at the moment.
Well, and John, here's the other part of this. If you know, the Phillies don't have as many chips as they used to.
Right.
Okay. Are you going to trade out Bohm?
Probably I'm not.
You're going to trade Medina? Probably not. Who else is attractive out there? And do the Phillies at a certain point, remember, you only have the one shot now. Okay, you don't have August to kind of reevaluate and sell off pieces or go add pieces cheap or whatever. You only have that July 31st deadline, okay? At a certain point, do the Phillies look and go, you know, we have too many holes to fill for this year. We play it out. We see what happens. If we make a run, great. But we don't lose any of the prospects, and then we kind of try to fill those holes in an open market next year. Could I see that happening? I could. I could not have seen that a couple weeks ago. I would have seen them being players for Bumgarner or Will Smith, or, you know, the Greinke name got brought up. They need a left-hander in the worst way, though, at this point. I don't see, you know, I think they're getting to the point right now where they may decide that there's too many holes to patch and not to throw bad money out, if you know
yeah.
what I mean.
Or yeah.
Chase prospects to just go fill holes for this year.
Yeah, no, I mentioned that a couple weeks ago on the podcast. I wrote a piece for The Good Fight about it. I don't think they should go all in for a starting pitcher at this point. And by all in, I mean trade one of their top two or three prospects. I'm not giving up Alec Bohm at this point. He just got called up to Reading. He might, you know, he might be a guy who's their starting third baseman next year. You know, you have, you know, Adam Haseley, who they expect to get off the DL, probably, or the IL, I keep saying the IL next week. And, you know, they're intrigued by Spencer Howard. Is their only pitching prospect who has top of the rotation upside at the moment. They're not trading him. So then what do you have left? You don't have much left to trade. And at that, you've got so many holes here. I agree with you. I mean, and all these, everybody, you know, talking about the different relief pitchers coming off the injured list who are going to come back. There's really only two guys that I'm interested in getting back off the injured list. And that's Adam Morgan and David Robertson. Everybody else is not a whole lot different than what they have. People talking about, you know, yeah, you don't want to be down all these different relief pitchers, but, you know, this is not a phenomenal collection of relievers that are sitting on the injured list, with the exception of a couple of guys. And you're right.
And I would say, I would add Tommy Hunter.
See,
is interesting, because Hunter's a professional. You know, I mean, the rest of them really haven't proven that they are true professional relievers yet. You know, Nicasio and all them. I'm just not ready to give that. Tommy Hunter at least has the feel of a guy who has gotten outs in spots in the big leagues. Whereas, you know, look, and we saw this with Neshek, and you know, these guys may come back. It doesn't mean that they're going to stay up forever, you know.
Cause yeah.
Especially the older guys, the three older ones, and Robertson and Neshek and Hunter – you know, they could go back on just as easily, you know?
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. So, I mean, I've never been a big Hunter fan, but, yeah, I hear what you're saying.
John, get back to the Kaplan point, though. And I brought this up with you on the phone, and, you know, I'm fascinated to get your feedback on this.
All right.
I almost compare, you know, it was funny. After the Segura home run on Thursday night, I saw a lot of people with the, aha, that was the right move, and it's become a very generational thing that there's a lot of, and I'm 45, so I'm not sure I fit in either generation, but there's a lot of older people, older generation people who view Cap or almost the way they viewed Hinkie and the Sixers, that anything they do, they turn their noses up. It's like they're drinking sour milk. And there's a younger generation that it will kind of applaud anything he does, no matter what, either. And I think there's some of us who want to look at this and go, you know, he can be both. Yeah, there's some things you can agree with, and there are some things you look at him and go, this is just absolutely wrong. And I don't know, am I reading this right or not?
I think you're right. I know a lot of the good fight writers that we have here are, most of them are younger than me. I'm 42, so I'm only a couple years behind you. And, you know, most of the good fight writers we have are younger than me. And I think they take a more, a newer school approach to, and agree with how Kapler has handled Gene Segura. And, you know, I wasn't one of the people, I've been kind of caught in the middle with Kapler and Segura and a lot of this different stuff that he's done and said. You know, I like a lot of the things that he's done. I like what he's tried to do sometimes, but there's also been a lot of very public mistakes that he's made that I don't think should be glossed over. And I'm, you know,
Irvin mistake is the biggest one. On Wednesday.
Yeah.
You put Cole Irvin in a 3-1 game.
There is absolutely no scenario under which that is the right move to make. And I just...
giving Sean Rodriguez a 3-0 green light.
No,
a man on third. It's awful.
And that's the thing. I think what he does is he's obviously a very player-friendly manager, and he likes for his players to make the call in certain situations. And that's, you mentioned it before. He is a former player, and he kind of thinks like that a lot of times. Well, I'd like to be able to swing 3-0. That is probably when you're going to get a fastball right down the middle. But you also, I think, back in the old days, you had to earn the right to swing 3-0. And I still believe in that. And I do have a lot of old school in me that, you know, from my younger days that I think is still right. I don't believe in sacrifice bunting all the time, but I think there are instances where it works. You know, I think that, you know, there's all kinds of different stuff. And that's where I get caught in the middle with Kapler. You know, I'm not one of the people who thinks he should be fired for putting Gene Segura in the starting lineup tonight. But I don't think Gene Segura should have been in the starting lineup tonight. It goes beyond hustling at that point. It's about your word meaning something. And so, yeah, that's where I'm caught with Kapler. And I do wonder now, you know, as he moves forward here for the rest of the season, you know, I don't feel qualified to say whether or not he should be fired, because I'm not in the locker room. I don't know how the players are reacting to him. But if he does lose this locker room, then he can't stay on. And I guess that this, you're right, the season has to play out, I think, before anybody can make a real decision here.
But let's also be honest, too, and there's a business end to this, okay? And what I mean by that is, you know, look, Matt Klentak, I doubt, goes anywhere. No matter what, you know, they could lose every game the rest of the year, and I'm not sure Matt Klentak goes anywhere.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. All right. And what we learned in the middle of the Bryce Harper situation was John Middleton's very aware of what the public says. And, you know, the fact that he mentioned the Zalecki polls, and whether it was a serious conversation or not, or if it was kind of, I don't want to say glad-handing, to the masses who wanted Harper, saying, we heard you, we got him,
as opposed
to the Machado. The fact that was raised, now that you kind of turn this to another level, you know, if you're hearing the public on that, are you going to hear the public when the public's calling for the head of the manager? That's a little concerning if you're a true person that believes you don't let the fans run the whole club.
Right.
That is concerning. concerning. You don't. I get there's a ticket buying aspect and there's a business aspect, and I do think that I would love to have seen what John Middleton was like this last week, because I'm sure he was bouncing off walls and angry as hell about what's going on. But there's also a point where a owner has to back away, and the owner also has to let the public emotion cool down. So but I almost wonder if we get to the end of the year and the mood is still kind of like this, if Capar has any chance no matter what.
Well, I mean, we all hope that they turn this thing around here over the next few weeks and make a run at it and get back in and get back into the division race, because right now 4.5 back. I mean, the Phillies are now closer to third place than they are first place in the National League East. The Nationals now just I think 3 games behind the Phillies now, and that was a nine game spread at one point just a couple weeks ago, just about 2 weeks ago.
And you still have, you know, right before the All-Star break, you got the 3 in Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you get 3 with Washington right out of the break, and then you get the Dodgers again.
Yeah.
So this is even when you get back from the break, they are in a serious, serious world of trouble. And John, one thing we nobody's really talked about, because I think everybody assumed the Phillies will be in this pennant race down the stretch. You better make hay in July and August, because that September schedule is loaded with road games.
Yeah,
and tough road games, and I don't know, you know, if they don't get a margin, you know, you figured they would have a margin going into that stretch at this point, that where they would either be even or close. If you're looking at a severe mountain having to climb, that's going to be real tough.
Yeah, the Phillies can't feel like they can be complacent. I see a lot of stuff on Twitter, it's only June. There's no only June. It's June.
It's old in June.
Yeah,
it gets late in June.
It's not early.
How many Junes have we seen the Phillies? You know, over the years, I could count 5 or 6 where June has absolutely been the anchor for this team.
Yeah,
dragged it down.
Been the burial. Yeah, that's when the burial happens in June. Absolutely. So the Phillies have to be very, very careful about that here over these next few weeks. But like you mentioned, they have the Marlins and the Mets coming up for the next few series. So hopefully that'll get this team headed in the right direction. But listen, Kevin, I appreciate your time, man, and we'll get you on again here in just a couple weeks, and hopefully we'll be able to talk about some better times with our hometown nine. Make sure you're reading Kevin Cooney's stuff in the Philly Voice and Forbes, and follow him on Twitter at Kevin Cooney. Kevin, thanks so much for coming back on Hitting Season, buddy. I appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Well, up next, the Phillies make a big move with their top prospect. I'll get into what that is up next right here on Hitting Season. And we're back on Hitting Season. Well, some good news and some anticipated news. We thought that something like this might be coming, and we're happy to see it happening. The Phillies' third overall pick in the 2018 draft, Alec Bohm, their top prospect, has been called up to AA Reading. He had been raking with Clearwater. He was, what was he batting, 329 with 4 home runs and 27 RBIs in 40 games with the Threshers. He started the season in Class A Lakewood, and he batted 367 with 3 homers and 12 RBIs in 22 games. So started in Class A Lakewood, went up to Clearwater, and now is up in Reading. Through 102 games in the minors, he's hit 309 with 7 home runs and 55 RBIs. 41 walks against 58 strikeouts. That will play. He has 25 multi-hit games so far this year, with three including multi-hit games in three of his last 4 games. Over his last 10 games in Clearwater, he's batting 351. He had a 3-hit game in his last game for Clearwater on Tuesday, and you know, I think this is not overdue. I know the Phillies were looking for him to hit certain targets, and looks like he's done that. I really do think, here's the thing: the Phillies can't trade Alec Bohm. We talked about this just a second ago with Kevin. The Phillies, if they're going to add pieces at the trade deadline, Alec Bohm has to be untouchable at this point, because Alec Bohm could be this team's starting third baseman next year. He really, really could. We look at how quickly Adam Haseley moved from AA to the major leagues. You could see Alec Bohm on the big league team this year. 23 years old, you could absolutely see him on the big league team this year. Probably not until September. But I think he's probably going to get into some Phillies games this year. Wouldn't surprise me at all. And I think there's a real good chance he's your starting third baseman next year. So that's why you don't trade Alec Bohm at this point. And I don't know if he's going to be a star player. Most people, I don't think, believe he's going to be an all-star, but he could. He's got a lot of upside. He's got a lot of talent. Obviously, you're taking third overall in the Major League Baseball draft. You have a pedigree. And I played in college for a number of years and came to the minor leagues, a pretty polished kid. We'll see how he does in Double-A Reading, but I imagine he'll hit well there because everybody hits well in Double-A Reading. So good news as the Phillies call up their top prospect to the majors. To Double-A. Alec Bohm gets the call to Double-A. We'll take a look at some other news and notes involving some of the Phillies minor leaguers. And, you know, unfortunately, Adonis Medina, one of the other guys that we've been talking about as a guy who could be traded, did not have a very good outing for Reading. There had been some talk about Medina coming up to the big league team and maybe making a start here or there, but the Phillies have been dead set against that. And Adonis Medina has been very up and down, had been good for Reading for the most part, but had a lousy start here on Thursday. So you can see why they don't necessarily want to bring him up just yet. I want to get him a little bit more seasoning down in Double-A before he gets the call to the big leagues. And earlier this week, Mickey Moniak made a terrific play in right field that made the SportsCenter top 10 with the number 9 play with going over the fence and robbing a home run from an opposing player. Just an outstanding play from Moniak, who, you know, is playing okay down in Double-A. He might get the call up to Triple-A at some point soon, too. The former number 1 overall pick in the draft, Mickey Moniak. Obviously, he's not going to project to be that guy, but maybe he puts it together a little bit here this year and, you know, can sniff the majors at some point in 2020. But it's good to see Mickey Moniak getting a little publicity on ESPN. That's never a problem. One other thing I wanted to mention before we finished up the podcast, you may have seen this on your baseball Twitter timeline. The Tampa Bay Rays have been given the go-ahead by Major League Baseball to look into playing a split season in Montreal. Commissioner Rob Manfred made the announcement on Thursday at the end of the owners' meetings. There's no timetable for the plan, and any idea under consideration is for the Rays to play their games in the Tampa area early in the season and then finish up in Montreal. And, you know, it's going to somebody, you know, the Rays love the opener. It sounds like that's what they want to do as far as where they play baseball. Use Tampa as their opener and then finish the season in Montreal. And we know why. It's because Tampa can't draw anybody. A little over 14,500 fans a game, and this is a good baseball team. Only the Marlins draw fewer teams. You know, baseball in Florida just didn't work. I don't know when we're going to admit the fact that baseball in Florida didn't work, but it didn't work. It doesn't work in Florida. Tropicana Field's a terrible stadium, but they can't get a new one. They looked into building a new stadium, but in December abandoned a plan to build a stadium across the bay in Tampa. And so I know Montreal is dying to get a team back. They obviously had the Expos from 1969 to 2004 before they became the Nationals. And you have to remember, the Expos actually played a good portion of their last two seasons someplace else in Puerto Rico. 22 games a year in San Juan, Puerto Rico. And so Manfred's given permission for the Rays to explore what a split season would be, splitting time between Tampa and Montreal. Would be interesting. I don't see it happening. I think there's a lot of hurdles that they need to clear in order to make that happen. But it certainly would be interesting. It'd be great to see baseball go back to Montreal. I just want to see the Expos come back. I'd love to see the old Expos return. Although somebody did mention on Twitter that I saw the new name for this Tampa Montreal team would have to be the X-Rays, right? I mean, it's too perfect. It would have to be the X-Rays, and you could have uniforms with the you know, like a human skeleton, you know, along the trust. That's a stupid idea. They won't do that. And please, I might delete that after we're all done. Your terrible idea. All right, let's preview this upcoming series against the Marlins. On Friday, Sandy Alcantara will take the mound for the Marlins against the Phillies. He's a 3.73 ERA on the season. The Phillies beat him up in a loss to them at Citizens Bank Park earlier this year. The Phillies got him for 6 runs in 5 innings in that game. And on the road this year, Alcantara has a 4.26 ERA. Opponents batting .265 off him away from Florida. He'll go up against Aaron Nola, who has a 4.89 ERA this year. It's 7.71 in his past 3 starts. He's just not throwing strikes, folks, and that's what the deal is. But that is a pitching matchup that should be in the Phillies' favor. On Saturday, Eliezer Hernandez will take on unknown as of this moment. Don't know who the Phillies are going to throw against Eliezer Hernandez. The 24-year-old lost both starts to St. Louis this week, but they say he had some tough luck against the Cardinals. Hitters are just 1-for-13 against his slider, and we all know how much the Phillies love to hit sliders. Also, teams just 188 off his changeup. He has a 1.17 whip so far, very early in his career. And on Sunday, the Phillies will see Jordan Yamamoto. Again, no idea who the Phillies are going to start on Sunday. Yamamoto has gotten two big league wins before allowing a run in the major leagues. The 23-year-old started his Marlins career by setting a franchise record with 14 straight scoreless innings. He's given up a total of 5 hits in 2 wins over the Cardinals. So again, Hernandez and Yamamoto, the Phillies have never seen either of these guys. That also does not necessarily bode well for Phillies hitters. They generally have a hard time against pitchers that they've never seen before. All right, gang. Well, now it's time for your stat of the week, and I wish I had some good stats to share with you, but I really don't. Nick Pivetta against the Nationals. We've really got to figure out a way for Nick Pivetta to never, ever, 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 ever face the Nationals again. Pivetta entered Thursday night with a career 1-5 record and a 10.94 ERA against the Nationals. And it wasn't a whole lot better tonight. Gave up 4 runs against against the Nationals. He just, I don't know what it is, man. He sees Nationals across their chest, and Nick Pivetta just has a brain hemorrhage. But a 1-5 record with a 10.94 ERA against the Nationals coming into the game, and those numbers did not get any better. Also, we should probably mention a couple Phillies killers for the Nationals, and we all know how well Anthony Rendon hits against the Phillies, and we all know, you know, how well Juan Soto has hit against the Phillies in the past, but Victor Robles is very, very quickly becoming the newest National Philly killer. He had another home run, broke the game open on Thursday against the Phillies. He has 13 home runs in his career. 4 of them have come against the Phillies, and coming into the game on Thursday, Robles had a career 6.15 slugging percentage and a 9.32 OPS in 42 career plate appearances against the Phillies. He just flat out kills us. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Kevin Cooney for coming on the podcast once again. Just a reminder, guys, if you haven't done so, please head on over to Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed and leave a rating and a review. And if you like bonus material, make sure to head on over to the Hittin' Season Patreon. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. Sign up on the $5 a month tier and you'll get bonus video stuff, bonus podcast from us, bonus written material, lots of stuff that Justin and Liz and I are putting up there for you guys, and we hope that you like it. And more stuff is coming, I promise. If there's a little bit of a dead period on the Patreon, we tend to put stuff up in waves. So be sure to look out for something. I'll probably have something else up this week that you'll enjoy. But make sure to check it out, patreon.com/hittin'season. Anyway, thanks everybody for tuning in and sticking with us during these dark, dark times right here on Hittin' Season.